Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Anything is Possible. It's our new podcast where three friends come together to engage in lively discussions on a wide variety of random subjects. We can go from funny anecdotes to thought-provoking conversations. We share our unique perspectives and insights while creating a fun and engaging listening experience for our audience. Please tune in to Anything is Possible for a dose of laughter, knowledge, and camaraderie among friends. This week, I will be your host. My name is Steve.
Steve!
I'm Christina.
And I am Ben.
This is where you introduce yourselves.
But you didn't introduce yourself!
Yeah, you didn't really say anything about yourself.
Yeah, bro, you can't make us vulnerable and you not vulnerable. Like, come on, okay, Steve, talk about yourself. Wait, make him talk about himself before we jump in. Steve, go.
Alright. So, my name is Steve. I am a 46-year-old English teacher at a high school in Ohio. I'm married, and I have two children, and my wife and I have been foster parents for about 6 years now.
Nice. Congratulations on that.
That's nice. Awesome.
Well, hey guys, I'm Christina. I work in the finance industry, and I am 43 years old. I live in Ohio, and I mean, my life is pretty exciting. I've got two cats and a dog. And that's pretty much it about me. Well, and I have an amazing partner. But
nice.
Ben.
And I am Ben, and I am 46, and I live in California. I have a master's in psychology, but I currently am a supervisor in logistics and like to hike, be out in the sunshine, exercise. Just try to keep myself going. Life is hard. Let's make it not, right? Like, work on it and get it done. And I do have to, though, before Steve continues, just say a couple things about Steve because I can't stop myself. So, number one, Steve says he's 46, but he doesn't turn 46 till June. So that's like ballsy to just give yourself a year when you still got a few months to pretend you're 45. Because your
46th year.
It is your 46th year, but your birthday is 3 months after mine, and I just celebrated mine. I definitely didn't give myself that 46th year until that day. Because that's a little rough. And then, two, I want to point out that Christina...
Well, can't see is I'm also rocking a starter Santa kit beard, so I figure, you know, parsing a year here and there is not going to make any difference.
No, he's lying about all that. Like, well, he does have the beard, but don't imagine him as, like, Santa, because... We'll get more listens if you think of him in his natural state, which is true. Steve has the most ripped six-pack you've ever seen in your life, like a Greek god. But I also wanted to point out that Christina is the one that came up with our name. Anything is Possible, and Steve said it quick and went through the title. Like, so, I mean, obviously, you'll see it in print. And Steve was, like, all about, oh, no, I'm an impossible. But, like, the whole point is that our show is random. And pasta is a random word, and anything is possible is also alluding to the fact that any topic could possibly pop up on this show. So I just want to throw that out there. And now I'll turn it back over to our host, Steve.
All right, well, here's the thing. I got a question for you guys. Have you ever been out in public and you've seen someone, you've seen a family maybe, and the first thing you thought was, I really hope that they don't reproduce.
100%.
Now, maybe it's a late night at Walmart and you see a mom and her kids and they are screaming at each other while wearing the dirtiest pair of pajama bottoms you've ever seen, and you think, she shouldn't have any more kids. We should cut her off. Have you had that thought before?
I try to be a little less judgmental. I mean, I've seen families where, like, sure, like, you have, like, you feel bad for them, but then I try not to, I don't know their lives.
Well, so this is going really well for Christine.
Christina said yes. I'm just outlier.
Well, then you've never, like, let's say you get a father who's being taken to court again for failure to pay child support again. And he walks in with his new girlfriend who's 8 months pregnant and who you know he's going to eventually leave and have child support payments that he won't pay again. Would you ever wish that the court had the power to order him to be sterilized?
Oh, Lord. I would feel very bad for that situation and that the children more than anything. I've never contemplated court-ordered sterilization, other than maybe for, like, pedophiles, and, you know, but hopefully they're just in prison and it doesn't matter.
I really do not know what to say at this point. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people out there that should not be allowed to have children. I do agree about that. I don't know that if I, like, saw them, maybe out, like, from their actions or hearing about their actions, but I can't say that I've seen people out there and I'm like, ooh, they should not be able to procreate.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's any scenario at all that would require or mandate the, you know, the public to order someone to be sterilized? Do you think that that's possible?
Rapists, pedophiles. I mean, yeah. If someone's a predator and they're almost not rehabilitatable, then yeah. But as far as like just people that are irresponsible, honestly, that just makes me sad because it's like I kind of feel like I would want a child and I'm at an age where it's like, I don't know if that's going to ever happen. So when I see families like that, instead of thinking about sterilization, I think it's just not fair that they were able to procreate and I'm not able to. Like, I haven't been able to, right? So it just kind of makes me sad.
I mean, I agree with Ben on that. It's like, I wasn't able to have children, and there are people out there that do not care for their children the way that they should. They neglect them, or they just have nothing to do with them because maybe, depending on the situation, drugs are more important, alcohol is more important. But you saying to be able to go into court and like have someone say you're going to be sterilized, I mean, I wish that we could do that with drugs. Like, maybe you shouldn't do drugs anymore because maybe you would be a better parent if you couldn't do drugs anymore. You know? I mean, there's some different circumstances.
Well, the reason that I ask these questions, the reason that I'm introducing it this way is because we're going to talk about a topic called eugenics. E-U-G-E-N-I-C-S. Eugenics. Have you ever heard of that term before?
No, sir.
No? Well, the eugenics movement in the U.S. happened at the beginning of the 20th century. So, let's back up a little bit here. Eugenics gets its name from Francis Galton, who was actually a cousin of Charles Darwin. Galton published a book about eugenics in 1883. Now, the word comes from eugenes, from the Greek, meaning good birth or good stock. You can hear the word genetics in there, right? It's, it has to do with genetics.
I remember it now.
And it's an immoral and pseudoscientific theory that claims it is possible to perfect people in groups through genetics and the scientific laws of inheritance.
Yeah, it's like pre-Hitler shit.
It is. It really is. And actually, more than you realize, the American eugenics movement gave Hitler a lot of the ideas that he pushed forward in his attempted Holocaust. He took them directly from the American eugenics movement. So, again, the idea is that you know, advocates that society should promote the marriage of what Galton, this Francis Galton, believed were the fittest individuals by providing monetary incentives. He advocated that the countries, the communities, should offer money to the most fit people to reproduce. after he writes his book, you know, it starts to make the rounds in scientific and then political circles, and intellectual and political leaders like Alexander Graham Bell, Winston Churchill, John Maynard Keynes, and Woodrow Wilson all adopt this theory of eugenics as, you know, as fact. They accept the notion that modern societies, as a matter of policy, should promote the improvement of the human race through various forms of governmental intervention. So it's this idea that the government has a role to play in how we reproduce. Sounds like a familiar argument right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's a scary thought. My major thought on it is that who gets to decide, and you can't just say the government. I mean, obviously, I don't know how it would come about, like what portion of the government or who would have the power to determine what aspects of human character are actually worth preserving. Because, I mean, a lot of ways, you know, like survival of the fittest stuff, like that occurs just naturally through genetics, isn't necessarily always promoting the best qualities, right? I mean, now we have people who can be hyper-independent to the point where they can't actually socially interact with people and have families and things like that. And it's like, so it's like, what aspects of human character would we want to preserve, and who would get to make that call?
And that's the point. And that's the issue. I think most people would concede that they can look around in public and they see people who are mistreating their children or who are reproducing irresponsibly. And the pull to step in and do something about it is, I think, a natural one. I think it's an easy one to fall into, to say, I think maybe we should, you know, keep this family from growing for the time being. But the problem becomes, like you said, who gets to make that call? Who gets to make that decision? And so, as I said, the theory is shared as fact throughout the academic world during the turn of the 20th century. And then, here in the United States, Indiana becomes the first state to enact a eugenics sterilization law in 1907. And that law states that caretakers at mental hospitals, prisons, or court officials can mandate the sterilization of anyone considered to be mentally ill, feeble-minded, or in other ways undesirable to reproduce. And so from 1907 to, like, 1925, 60,000 Americans are sterilized because of disabilities. They are forced to be sterilized because of disabilities. They're considered mentally ill, unstable, or feeble-minded in some way. This is only just getting started at that time. So, socially disadvantaged groups who are living on the margins of society, the targets for this law as well. More states start passing sterilization laws. In fact, at one point in the United States, 30 of the 50 states had a sterilization law on the books in the beginning of the 20th century, forcing people to be sterilized if the court said so. From 1934 to 1945, which you might recognize that year, those years as the years that we were involved in World War II, right? The height of the Third Reich. In the United States, 350,000 compulsory sterilizations were done.
So, I'm sorry, Steve, but who are they sterilizing, men and women? And how are they sterilizing women?
That's a great question. They are sterilizing men and women. The higher number is women, and they're sterilizing women through surgical procedures to remove their ovaries. It's horrifying, isn't it? The National Socialist Committee is the one responsible for the compulsory sterilization program at the time. and they have direct links to the Nazi Party. And so we look back at World War II time in the United States. We are the ideological, we have, there's some ideological roots in the United States for the Holocaust. The idea that you could perfect a race, that you could perfect our species through only reproducing people who fit a certain standard is something that is an American idea before it's a German one.
It's interesting. It's like, I mean, obviously, a lot of the things I would say about this would be common sense, and I think we all know it now, but a lot of the, if you look at a lot of the great things that have come on the world, like a Vincent Van Gogh, right, like art and, you know, music and some things that have really shaped our society and culture and lives, they came from flawed people. And those people, if you just looked at them based on imperfections that one group is judging, then we wouldn't have had those things. So it's, you know, clearly bad.
Well, what's up? I mean, the other thing that's like terrible about that is that you're prematurely forcing women into menopause. I mean, and I'm sure you guys really don't know anything about menopause, but it is one of the most horrific things that I've ever been through. And I'm on like year 5, but removing both of your ovaries would like put you into that right away. And I think that some women, it might drive them more mad.
Yeah, and you said it was a psychiatric clinics that were making these decisions to begin with, right?
Right, and I don't know if you caught the term that I've used a couple times here, feeble-minded. This was a prognosis, this was a diagnosis that was used at the time, and it was used for people who were on the outsides of society. And so if you were doing something that was considered to be, you know, socially divisive in some way, you could be labeled feeble-minded, and then you could be put into these colonies and institutionalized. And so we're going to talk about a woman here in a minute, because it all kind of, not culminates, but it rises to this Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court case is called Buck versus Bell from 1927. And Oliver Wendell Holmes is the Supreme Court Justice who writes the decision in favor of this. But this this court case, it is still on the books, and it has not been overturned. And so this is one of the scariest things. Let's start with this young lady, Carrie Buck. When Carrie Buck is a young girl, her mother is diagnosed as feeble-minded, and it's a diagnosis based less on medical finding than on the doctor's perception that her sexual behavior was an issue. And so then she's committed to the Virginia State Colony of Epileptics and Feeble-Minded in Lynchburg. So Buck moves in with a foster family in 1923. She then becomes pregnant after being raped by her foster cousin, I believe. So she claims that he raped her. Now the family, this foster family, takes his side, and they use her pregnancy as proof that she is also feeble-minded. And so she is then institutionalized. The teenager is similarly deemed epileptic and feeble-minded and placed at the colony after she gave birth in 1924. So the child was born, but taken away from her. She is then institutionalized. The colony superintendent decided to use Buck as a test case, because the thing with laws in the United States is the states can write and pass laws all they want, but then the courts have to test those laws. And so courts then get a say on whether those laws are constitutional or not. And so if you have a law like this sterilization law in Virginia, they want to test it. They want to have the Supreme Court weigh in on it. So they decide to have Buck sterilized. She fights it, and it eventually makes its way to the Supreme Court in 1927. She's saying she has the, they don't have the right to dictate this to her. He says that, or they say that they do. So the court rules in favor of the state, and Oliver Wendell Holmes writes the decision, and he writes this: Carrie Buck is a feeble-minded white woman who was committed to the state colony above mentioned in due form. She is the daughter of a feeble-minded mother in that same institution, and the mother of an illegitimate, feeble-minded child. She was 18 years old at the time of the trial of her case. In his decision, this is what Oliver Wendell Holmes had to say. He said, "We have seen more than once that the public welfare may call upon the best citizens for their lives. It would be strange if it could not call upon those who already sapped the strength of the state for these lesser sacrifices, often not felt to be such by those concerned, in order to prevent our being swamped with incompetence. It is better for all the world if, instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for crime, or to let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind. The principle that sustains compulsory vaccination is broad enough to cover cutting the fallopian tubes. Three generations of imbeciles are enough." And that's from Oliver Wendell Holmes, considered one of the most brilliant legal minds of the 20th century in America.
I don't even know what to say.
I thought you guys would have more to say about this.
I mean, it's all, like, depressing to me, because it's like, it's just, I don't know, it's horrific.
Well, I mean, it's kind of depressing because it's like my dad was born in 1927. So what if my grandmother had been feeble-minded? And you know what I mean? Like, there are so many things going through my head right now, but this is very, like, shocking. I had no idea that this was going on ever.
Right. It's not something that we talk about a lot in our history, but it's this horrifying period of time, and even the last sterilizations that were carried out in the United States were done in the 1970s. This lasted for, you know, close to 70 years. 1907 is the first law put on the books in Indiana, and they're not really taken off until the early 1970s. Ohio attempted to do it several times, but never actually got a law on the books. But we're all the latest states. Our last attempt by any of our by the state Congress to try to start a sterilization program was in 1963. And so, I love that you say that, Christina. That, you know, you're putting in relationship to your own generations. Like, 1907 sounds like so long ago, but it's not. It's you know, two generations for us. That we go back to that point, and you think that that was something that was acceptable, or that was even, you know, considered to be the right thing to do for our communities. That's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you know, things that happen in society that are bad kind of fall along the line of the everyone wants to think that they're special, and it didn't affect the majority, so the majority of people could be like, well, I'm not feeble-minded, so I think it's totally fine if we stop this from happening because people think they're better than everyone else. But in all reality, everyone's kind of got issues and things they need to deal with, and, you know, like, depending upon how you're looking at it, I feel like anyone back then could have been put in the feeble-minded category, but it sounds more like they were just targeting, you know, specific socioeconomic classes, right, which is kind of depressing too, right? Because, like, if you, like, again, if you look at society, there's a lot of rags to riches people who have started with nothing and ended up, I mean, like, Elvis Presley lived in a tiny little house and was the biggest musician who ever lived, arguably, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people that wouldn't have been able to accomplish the things they did if their families had been affected by this.
So he said thank you very much, and he was trying to pretend like he was Elvis, even if you didn't notice that. But so how old was Beth when she went into foster care?
Let me see. She was born in 1920. Or no, I'm sorry. Her mother was, okay. She was 14 when she went into foster care. She was 17 when she was impregnated by the family's nephew.
So,
and 18 when she was...
She was with the same exact family the whole entire time.
For three years.
So, they're pretending like they didn't know her values or her morals. I mean, 3 years, you can kind of tell, right? I mean, you've had a foster child for how long? You can kind of tell his morals right now. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, and it's, but, you know, the thing was, here they have their nephew that they've known their, his entire life, and then they have this girl who's been with them for 3 years, and she says that he raped her. He says he didn't. They have to take a side, and they take his side. And I'm not saying it's right, but that's what they chose to do. And you know, they may have known that on some level that he was at fault, but perhaps they felt more comfortable really kind of ruining her life than ruining his.
But even if it was consensual, he's sleeping with someone that they're saying is feeble-minded, and so wouldn't that make him feeble-minded, and why is it just the woman who is getting impacted by this? He impregnated her.
Boys will be boys. Locker room talk. You know, that stuff.
Grab her by the... Never mind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it's the same reason why you see, you know, people like, who was that? Who's that swimmer from Stanford a few years ago who got convicted of rape, but only ended up getting 3 months in jail because the judge said that he...
didn't want to ruin his life, right?
Brock Turner,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was because he's like, well... You know, here's this young man with such great promise, and we don't want to judge him by the worst thing he's done.
Right. Meanwhile, the girl is going to have PTSD and suffer for the majority, if not all, of her lifetime.
And so, yeah. You know, last I heard, he lives near Columbus.
Yeah, I heard he was in Ohio. That's weird, right?
Yeah. And to be perfectly honest, his life is ruined because no one will ever let him live that down. No one will ever give him peace, you know. You know, I'd much rather have seen him do him, you know, 10 years in prison for what he did. But that's the thing, is, you know, boys have always been judged by a different standard when it comes to the law. That's unfortunate, but, you know, here we have another case like that.
Oh, I was just saying that I'm kind of shocked that they let her have the child at, like, full term and didn't abort it.
Well, abortion was not legal.
Sterilization's fine. Abortion, no way.
Abortion wasn't legal, but sterilization was. And so, but yeah, the now she had been sterilized long before the Supreme Court case came about. She, you know, they were fighting it. They were fighting the law rather than her own because she was done. But she actually passed away in 1983. Carrie did. So she lived to be 77 years old, so the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Virginia's law was constitutional and the buck should be sterilized. Her sterilization was the first of approximately 8,300 performed under state law between 1927 and 1972. After her release from the colony, Buck, in sharp contrast to her diagnosis, lived an active life until her death in the 1980s.
I want to know what she did for a living. I want to know, like, everything about her. Because I feel like, so she lived for 77 years. She wasn't allowed to have any more children. So, what did she do for a living? What was she allowed to do for a living?
She had a child, right?
Yeah, well, she had a child, but, and it looks like she knew her child because her child's name was Vivian.
Mm-hmm. Vivian Alice Elaine Buck. And she was put into the colony with her at Lynchburg on June 4th.
Did she get her child back?
So, at a hearing on January 23rd, 1924, Buck was adjudicated epileptic and feeble-minded following the birth on March 28th. So following the birth, she was adjudicated that way while she was still pregnant. So she's put in there, and then following her birth on March 28th, 1924, of an illegitimate daughter, Vivian Alice Elaine Buck, Buck entered the colony in Lynchburg on June 4th. Her former foster family took her infant daughter home and gave her their name. Shortly after Buck's commitment, the superintendent is the one who tries to get her sterilized. Let's see. So after being surgically sterilized on October 19th, 1927, and released from the Virginia colony to work for a family in Bland County, Buck married William D. Eagle, a widowed carpenter, on May 14th, 1932. A quarter century after his death, on July 23rd, 1941, she married Charles A. Benamor of Front Royal in 1965. Friends, family, friends, relatives, and professionals who knew her later in life denied the accuracy of her diagnosis as mentally retarded. She was independent and a helpful person to others for most of her life. Carrie Buck Eagle Denmore died on January 28, 1983 in a nursing home in Waynesboro and was buried in Oakwood Cemetery in Charlottesville. Vivian Dobbs, the daughter from whom she was separated shortly after giving birth, is buried in an adjacent hillside. Belying Justice Holmes' famous opinion, Dobbs was an honor student when she died of enterocolitis in 1932 at the age of 8. So, the practice of involuntary sterilization did not cease in Virginia institutions until 1972, and the Enabling Act remained on the books until April 1974. So, the child passed away at the age of 8, so I don't believe that she ever got to know her child.
That's a lot to unpack right there. That's a lot. This whole entire thing, I never knew any of this happened back then, closer to when you guys were born, because I'm much younger.
But, yes.
Yeah. But I just think that is just so messed up. Like, all of it is just so messed up. And for that family to take that little girl and raise her as their own, to be closer to the man that raped this woman, and then, I don't know, it's just, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. And, taking on that child, they probably felt like they were doing what they were supposed to do. But in the meantime, they threw away that girl. They absolutely threw her away. Because that was the thing. It was that her promiscuity was what got her labeled as feeble-minded. But how can you call it promiscuity when she was most likely raped? It was a way to get rid of her. It was a way for the family to not look at the shame that somebody in their family had created.
So, did they say exactly how the little girl died? Because, that's a little sketchy, too. 8 years old and she dies?
Enterocolitis.
And what is that exactly? Do we know?
It's an inflammation that occurs throughout your intestines. It combines enteritis, inflammation of the small intestine, with colitis, inflammation of the large intestine. Inflammation in either of your intestines is common, but when it occurs in both, it tends to be more severe. And so, something going on with her digestive tract. Now, the causes are salmonella, different bacteria, different viruses, like an enterovirus or rotavirus. To be honest with you, it sounds like the kind of thing that in 1932 people would get and die from, because we had shitty hygiene habits and a shitty understanding of what bacteria and viruses can do.
But also, you're saying that it could be caused by salmonella and this, that, and the other. So, if the parents were a little bit smarter, they could have caused this in her.
No, I don't think so. I think it was. I mean, I totally not. I don't know, but it sounds like the kind of thing that more people would die from back then because of our lack of medical understanding. Like, I think that was just a simple thing that happened in, you know, in 1932 America. Yeah. But that's just a guess. And I want to amend earlier. She was actually taken from her mother. So let's see. She's born Carrie Buck in Charlottesville, the daughter of Frank Buck, a tinner, and Emma Adelaine Harlow Buck. At age 3, Carrie Buck is taken from the care of her mother and placed with foster parents John and Alice Dobbs. So she was with them as a foster child from the age of 3. 1920, right, so now she's 14, authorities deem Emma Buck a low-grade moron and promiscuous for having a child out of wedlock and commit her to the Virginia State Colony of Epileptics and Feeble-Minded in Madison Heights near Lynchburg. 1923, so she had, but yeah, it's an interesting for low-grade moron. That was her official title. That was an official medical determination.
I mean, that's what we call Ben, but right there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ben, you've always been a high-grade moron.
Thanks, bro.
I don't know. Like, now it is seeming like, okay, so it wasn't just 3 years. It was from the age of 3 to 14, so they had her. They probably adopted her at that point, you would think, right? After fostering for 11 years, don't you want to adopt that child? Unless, and I don't know the foster system back then, so these people could have just been in it for the money, but I feel like 11 years is a pretty long time to not.
And I don't know how much. I don't know how much money would even be involved back then. So. But. No, she's just, that's an interesting thing when you look at, you know, crazy laws that have been on the books. You look at the court decisions that enabled them, or that, you know, and that's what makes her so interesting is that she's a test case. But don't forget, there were 350,000 Carrie Bucks in the United States who were forcefully, or, you know, faced full compulsory sterilization. My wife actually has a half sister who is mentally handicapped. She was born without a soft spot in her skull, and when at the time they can fix it now, if that, you know, that's something that they can work on. But at the time that she was born, they couldn't do anything, and so her brain was not able to develop the way it probably could have. And so she's essentially a 6 or 7 mentally. And my wife said, told me that when she was late teens, early 20s, they got her a hysterectomy because, you know, that was something, this was in the, she was born in the early 70s. But so this was in the late 80s, and this is still something that, like, you know, if somebody is not able to make those decisions for themselves, if there's a power of attorney, you know, that's something that still does get done.
Yeah, I don't know, that's right? That's confusing, because it's like, you wouldn't want a 7-year-old raising a child, but I don't know how you deal with that, right? The right way. That doesn't seem like the right way, but I don't know what you do. I mean, you can't just hope that they never have intercourse, because
you can't say that she was giving informed consent either.
Right.
To do it, you know, as a 6 or 7-year-old.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like there would have had to been other facts for a doctor to just be like, all right, cool, let's just take everything.
Well, it's the mental retardation is enough, you know? Like, well, now, let me ask you this. Let's say that an 18-year-old walks into a doctor's office right now, you know, a fully competent and, you know, intelligent 18-year-old woman walks into a doctor's office and says, "Doctor, I don't want to have children. I never want to have children. This is a decision that I have made, and I firmly believe in this decision. I would like to get a hysterectomy." Do you think that she should be able to do that?
Okay, so I can speak on this. So when I was 27 years old, I actually asked my doctor, I was like, "Can I get my tubes tied? Can I do something?" Because I used to have like the worst period, basically, so to the point where I would pass out from the pain. They would wake me up in like a dead sleep, and it's like they were just awful. And I would like, if they were actually hurting my immune system, I would end up getting like bronchitis like almost every 3 months because I was in so much pain. My immune system would go down, and then I would end up being sick like constantly. So I went to my doctor and I was like, "Can I do this?" You know, and it's like, I don't know. And I wasn't thinking really about having children. I was just thinking about not having this pain anymore. And she told me, she was like, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. Because you might change your mind. You might want children. You might meet someone. Blah, 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 whatever. And it's like, I had to wait pretty much until I was 38 years old. And I told her, "I am not having children. Please help me take these organs out of me because I am in so much pain." And so she was like, "Well, we'll do an ablation and we will ablate your tubes," which is kind of like tying your tubes except for they burn your tubes. And then they take a machine and they put it over your uterus and they ablate that so that you will no longer have periods. So they get in there. I'm 38 years old at this point, and they said that it was a my choice surgery, so my insurance would not cover it. And even though when they got in there, they ended up having to wake me up after the surgery, and they said, "I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to have a full hysterectomy." When we got in there, everything was a complete mess, and like, you probably should have had this done a long time ago. So it's like one of those things where it's like, I was asking for it when I was 20 years old, and I was told no, because what if you want to have children? And then I was 38. And it was, my hand was forced. So it's like, I mean, like this whole entire episode, I'm just kind of like, my mind is just boggled.
Well, and I had no idea about any of your personal experiences with that. And I'm amazed that it was so complicated to take care of yourself. And I think that a lot of guys don't realize that like female healthcare is a very, very different thing, and it's a very complicated thing that, you know, we don't feel good. We go in, doctor take a look, doctor fix. Like, that's kind of how men see healthcare. And but for women, it's what, there's so many different factors that go into it, and even like political factors, and what are people going to think, and am I, you know, the doctor's got to think, am I going to get sued if I do this for this woman? You don't see that with men's health care as well. So it's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I cried when she finally told me that I was allowed, like, she allowed it. Because I was just kind of like, do you not understand that I probably could have lived like my early 30s pain free? And yes, I ended up having to have both ovaries removed because they were so highly damaged. I would have never been able to have children in the first place because everything was completely just a mess. And it's like, but I wasn't given the opportunity to make my own decision because I had a doctor saying no. And I mean, I probably could have gone to multiple other doctors, but I respected her. And then it ended up having to happen anyway.
Couldn't they have done some sort of ultrasound or something and determined that you needed that prior to that point?
Oh, I mean, I had ultrasounds. I had, like, all sorts of stuff done. And no one ever came back to me and told me that I, like, I had endometriosis, which is endometriosis, but it's inside of the uterus. I had fibroids that were, like, almost attached to my uterus, and they were pressing against my bowel. They had to stitch my bowel in. That's how big it was when I had it removed. And it's like, could this have been avoided had I been treated the way that I wanted to be treated when I was 27 instead of having to wait 11 years before I was allowed to do it? And then being told that there was a thing out there where these people, like, I mean, like, your wife's sister, where she was 8 years old, and, like, I mean, did she go through menopause? Like, I have so many questions about this. Like, was she thrown into menopause? If you take the one thing that is creating hormones, and maybe that's why she still acts like a seven-year-old, if that's how I heard that.
She was older. She was like, mentally seven.
Mentally seven now, still?
Yeah. Right, Steve?
She wasn't able to grow up. She was I at least had the hormones to make me an adult woman. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was over 18. If I said 8, I apologize, but...
Oh my gosh, you did, and, okay, thank you. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Sorry, I don't know exactly when. This was well before my wife and I met. This had happened, and... My wife isn't really, like, she wasn't, they weren't being raised by the same people at that time, and so she doesn't really know how it worked out. Her sister, her half-sister, is a little older than her, or older than her by, I think, 10 or 12 years. But, but I always wonder about that, and I always wonder, you know, what kind of hoops had to be jumped through, and what was, you know, was this a power of attorney thing, you know, are there still labels that people can have that make that something that's an acceptable thing to do? Like, okay, you are stamped as mentally retarded, so you are allowed to now have this done, or because, you know, you weren't allowed to have the surgery that would have made your life better because you were a fully functional person. And, you know, I'm sure the doctor feared that you might sue afterwards. You know, I can't have kids now. I'll never have kids, and I can't change that. I'm going to sue you. You didn't talk about that enough with me, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's what a lot of doctors are going through now with all of the different abortion bans that are being put out into different states, is, like, doctors are afraid to make decisions in the healthcare of because the language of the laws is enough to where they could face repercussions for doing their job or for doing what's best for the patient.
But that's also why we sign, like, documents. Like, do you understand that if you have this surgery, you will never be able to procreate? Do you understand if you have this procedure done, XYZ? Do you understand?
And therapy should be involved.
Yeah, and it's like, if they were saying that I was too young at 27 to make that kind of decision, then let me go to counseling.
Yeah.
Let me figure it out for myself. Tell me the steps that I need to do to make my life better. Because, I mean, I was hella sick all the fucking time. And, like, after I had my surgery, in 2018, it was 2019. I did not get sick until this year. This is the first time that I have ever been sick since I had that surgery. Like, right then and there shows you 5 years of not being sick because I got rid of my periods? Like, come on. That just shows you what they were doing to me, what my insides were screaming. They were saying, hey, we're unhappy. Please do something about this.
Is Hellasic, is that a, the scientific name for it? Is that what it was?
Hellasic.
Hellasic.
You can Google it if you want. I don't know what will come up.
I don't even.
Oh, gotcha. Well, everything starts with a man. Menopause. But no, I mean, I this is very interesting. I had no idea that any of this was going on ever. And like, seriously, I'm bored. Thanks for bringing it up.
Well, and I think that's the whole point of maybe what we're doing, and is to kind of like, you know, talk about something that doesn't get talked about, or that, you know, that we know that other people don't know, or that just is an interesting, you know, fact. And so, you know, I think that we're going to find that the three of us, as we take our turns being hosts, we're probably going to start falling into some patterns here. I'm a teacher, and so a lot of my stuff is going to be stuff that I've run into, you know, like heard in the classroom from different, you know, like books that we teach. This is something that we talk about when we talk about Brave New World. I've taught that novel before. And so we talk about how, you know, that's a novel where, you know, with 500 years in the future, you know, society has decided to only reproduce by manufacturing the type of people that they want in that society, the type of people that they need. And so they create different levels, and they have workers, and they have the intelligent people, and so, you know, the idea of eugenics and the foundation of it is something that I encountered teaching it. And so I'm going to end up with that. And so I'm interested to see where the two of you will take your topics. I find different moments in human history so fascinating. And eugenics was one of those things that, you know, I do a similar experiment with my students when I teach this novel. I ask them about, like, looking at people and thinking about, you know, who they might take away the right of reproduction from. But, of course, I don't say it in that way. You know, we talk about, like, looking at people and thinking, like, you need to stop having kids. You shouldn't be allowed to have kids. You shouldn't have kids now. You shouldn't be waiting, or whatever it is. I think it's easy for us to interject our ideas of what reproduction, you know, should be, because, you know, we look at people and we think, like, ugh, you're only hurting those kids, or you're only hurting society, or whatever. Because I got into a conversation with a guy in a foster parent training session once, and he was talking about, you know, some of the parents that he's dealt with, the kids that have come to him, and he was like, I just wish we could just stop them from reproducing. And he, yes, but then, you know, I talked to him and I said, that's a really slippery slope. And it's a slope that we've fallen down before. You know, when you look at the way eugenics was used, and these laws were used, the people that were affected were the people that were powerless. You know, there were some people that were sterilized mainly because of the race that they were, or because they were poor, or because they were considered something that they weren't because they didn't have the power to change that. And, you know, I think that power dynamic that we have in that in this country, you know, who has power and why, can determine so much for the future of our, you know, our world. And I think it's important for us to go back and learn the lessons that we should have learned the first time 100 years ago. And that's why I think it's important to know things. So I'm glad. I hope you two enjoyed it. I hope that there are audience members that enjoyed it. But it's interesting to go back to these lessons.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I mean, I had absolutely no clue. And clearly, you could tell by my facial expressions and my silence at some points that I was just trying to gather my thoughts and figure out what to even say, because I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So, but thank you for bringing it up. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. It was a I didn't know about all the sterilizations either, so yeah, very interesting topic.
No problem. Thank you, and I hope I can't wait to learn something from you guys. I can't wait to hear from it. So, to all of you out there in podcast land, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for listening to it, and we hope to see you next time on Anything Is Possible.
Woo! Thanks, guys.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.